Hello and welcome to the Alligator Sports Podcast. This is the show for Monday, October 3rd, 2011. I'm your host, Greg Luca, and I am joined by two writers who are probably going to take an opportunity to gloat. We finally got something right this weekend. We'll start with Matt Watts over here.
Kind of dealing with a lower leg injury right now, so forgive me.
All right, and I'm sure Muschamp Gate would give us the similar injury report, or maybe even less detail somehow. And we have Tom Green.
My Gator guarantee from preseason is looking pretty good right now.
Yeah, Tom said that John Brantley would not be the starter by the end of the year, and looks like due to injury, he's got that one right. I mean, we'll talk a lot about that. Looks like he's going to miss next week, at least next week, possibly longer, and that Jeff Driscoll will be starting. We're also going to break down the Alabama game in detail. A lot of stuff on why Florida couldn't get the run game going, on why they couldn't stop Bama's run game. We'll search around for some bright spots. Might be a little bit tough to find, but we'll see what we can dig out. And we're just going to break down Alabama completely and try to spin some things ahead to LSU because it does not get any easier this weekend. Before we get into all that, I want to start with an email. This one is from Vince Fagnola, who we have not heard from a while. He was one of our biggest fans. He kind of dropped off the map for a little bit, but we're glad to have him back in the email.
There you go.
So he said, first off, let me congratulate you all on the sound quality. It sounds like you guys are in mid-season form, which is always nice to hear. I think we've been doing pretty well.
Anyway, we're getting better each and every week.
Back to the email. He said, I'd like to submit my vote for the new ending quote for the show. Now, a quick interjection here. You guys, I don't know if you guys heard Friday's show, but one thing that was tossed around was having a different little end sounder like we had back in the Adam Berry era where every time the show would end, there'd be a little bit of a delay, and then you would hear Bobby shout, end the show, Barry, little sound bite there, and then that would end the show right there and cut it off. So he says, it actually comes from Mike Gillisley, and if you can actually get a sound bite of him saying, it mean grind, that would be a great ending for the show this year, especially after the way you've been pumping out these shows lately, even with the close practices and through the occasional flu bug, keep it going. Now, the it mean grind phenomenon has kind of died down a little bit, but I don't hate this idea. A little bit throwing that in there. I mean, I want to hear what you guys have to say. We'll have to run it by Tyler and Co. But what do you guys think about this?
I'm all for this, and I may still have that Mike Gillis.
Oh, I know for a fact I have it. I have the sound if we can pull it out.
I mean, it's got to happen. This is one of those ones that should go down in Gator lore as, you know, just one of the most idiotic things ever uttered from a Gator athlete. So why not immortalize it on our podcast?
Right. So maybe if we have a little time this week, we'll pull that out and I will run it by Tyler and maybe Cody, if he's in here, he can have some input. We'll see what we get. And if we decide to go with that, you'll find out at the end of next show.
Appreciate that, Vince.
Yeah. One more thing. Vince actually correctly called Andre DeBose's kind of little secret explosion weapon at the beginning of the game, referred to him as a secret weapon. So I mean, he did say Florida would win 42-17, so that was a little bit off. But I'll give him some credit for the Andre DeBose love. That's not too bad. Okay, so the logical first place to start breaking down the Alabama game is John Brantley. Was 11 of 16 for 190 yards and a touchdown. Was having a very good first half and then obviously left the game with an injury. We're not 100% on what that is. Muschamp being Muschamp, we know it's lower leg and that's about that. But we've heard reports high ankle sprain, kind of looked like there might be some knee stuff, but again, we don't know. So anyway, Muschamp did say that he'll be out next week against LSU, so that's the big piece of news right now. What was your guys' just general reaction when you saw him go down? If you wanted to take a random guess how long you think he'll be out and how that's going to affect the team going forward.
When I saw him go down, I was kind of perplexed. I mean, everybody was kind of wondering what the injury was. The replay, it showed he initially grabbed his knee, but then the trainers were examining his ankle area, and the early reports from unnamed sources have been a high ankle sprain. I mean, it kind of makes sense. John Brantley hasn't, you know, been injured a lot in his career, so he's going to overreact to an injury, I think, a little bit. I would venture to guess that it is probably just a high ankle sprain. Muschamp said today there was not going to be any surgery required, so at worst, it's a sprain to a ligament in his knee as well, which wouldn't require surgery. I mean, he's going to be out, I would venture to say, at least the next 2 weeks, at least the next two, and probably not back until the Georgia game. But that gives him actually 3 weeks off because the bye week is after the Auburn game.
Which is kind of convenient for them. Tom, what did you make of what you saw?
I mean, the first time I saw it, like, live action and then looking at the replay, legs aren't supposed to bend like that. I thought he, like, my initial reaction was, oh, man, John Brantley might be out for the season. How is the team going to handle this? But again, we don't know too much. Muschamp being Muschamp, lower leg injury. What I thought was curious was that he said
that he would update it every Monday, which seems to imply that it's going to be a more than 1 week thing. They're just not sure how long it's going to be.
Right, yeah. From what I remember just hearing about high ankle sprains in other sports and with other teams, it could be anywhere from, like, a couple weeks to, like, 2 months, just depending on how long, how bad the sprain is, obviously, and how long it takes a specific athlete to recover. When I saw it, it seemed like the knee was bent all the way back, but then I was like, well, maybe that's not so bad because that's how knees work. But the way, like, his cleat was... The way his cleat was, like, stuck in the turf, I could see where sort of the back end of his, you know, lower leg, like they said, was kind of twisted a little bit. So when Brantley went out, second half was all Jeff Driscoll, and he was 2 of 6 for 14 yards. Didn't really throw a whole lot, which is probably a product of his inability to throw a whole lot and the fact that Florida couldn't run the ball, but more on that later. Right now, what did you guys make of Driscoll's performance in this game?
He didn't really show that much. I mean, he had a lot of pressure in his face, but he also... On the first two series he was in, facing manageable third downs, just scrambled way too early. I mean, albeit there wasn't a lot of stuff happening downfield, and he's got that great athletic ability, but to succeed as a quarterback, you got to be able to stand in the pocket, complete a throw throughout the game. And I'm not sure he's, you know, ready for that. He was playing Alabama in a night game in the Swamp on national TV in a game he wasn't prepared to go into necessarily. So, I mean, under the circumstances, he showed... to be a true freshman.
Right, yeah. To me, it just looked like... I thought in the first couple of games, he kind of was comfortable in the pocket, it looked like. He didn't have to do a whole lot in those games either, but he looked, like, comfortable back there, making his reads, kind of handling the pressure. And in this game, I don't want to say he looked overwhelmed, but it was a little bit... It was something more than we saw the first couple of weeks. Tom, what did you make of Driscoll's performance?
I mean, it just... Going up against Alabama's defense, that's, like, an NFL-caliber defense with their size and their speed. It just looked to him like... The game was moving too fast for him to really, you know, get a grasp of what was going on. He overthrew a few balls. He could have easily made some nice throws, but he just overthrew them by a couple yards a couple times. But, yeah, he looked like a freshman.
I mean, this is Alabama's defense we are talking about. They have a knack of doing that to a lot of good quarterbacks, not necessarily saying Josh was a good quarterback. And also... I mean, I agree that John Brantley was playing well for much of that first half, but it seemed to me after he threw that interception that it all started to go downhill for the Gators, and it wasn't a matter of who the quarterback was. They weren't going to win that ball game. I think we were talking about this the other night in the office. You could kind of tell that Charlie Weiss's script had run out, and they had trouble executing the offense after that. The series where he threw the interception... It started with Chris Rainey taking a snap from Wildcat, where he lost 8 yards. He looked lost. So the play looked like it got blown up. The second play on that series, it looked like the ball got snapped too early. John Brantley wasn't ready for it, and then just went ahead and fell forward for a loss of one. And then on the third play, he got pressure straight up the middle and threw the ill-advised pick directly to Courtney Upshaw. So, I mean, after that, you kind of saw a completely different John Brantley. He looked good on the drive right before half. But other than that, I mean, it was some spottiness.
Right, I see what you're saying, because I guess the drop-off from Brantley to Driscoll probably isn't as bad as it seemed in that game, just because Brantley himself, after the first couple of drives, was not doing the kind of thing he's been doing. Let's see, when we look at Driscoll for the season, 5 of 10, 59 yards, 2 interceptions. Obviously hasn't been great so far, but he's been the backup for a long time. They announced that fairly early in fall camp that he was number 2. Muschamp reiterated this morning that he's the backup, but what they said was that competition's still kind of open, and if somebody shows something in practice, it could be Jacoby Brissett or it could be Tyler Murphy. I mean, do you guys foresee a situation where it could be one of those two, or do you guys think it's going to be Driscoll's job to lose here?
I do not see Jacoby Brissett playing probably at all this season. I mean, Driscoll was able to assert himself as the backup quarterback because he got here in January as a true freshman. That's a big advantage. I know Jacoby Brissett has had the playbook since he signed with Florida, but just the fact that Driscoll was here, he got all through spring practice, through summer, just learning that new offense is going to take a while. And the way I see it, Florida has 2 freshman quarterbacks. One of them is going to get redshirt, and you've already got Driscoll playing in games. Why are you going to burn Jacoby Brissett's redshirt for that?
I agree with all those points you just made, but I kind of drew something from this morning's press conference. Muschamp said that Driscoll did sprain his ankle against Alabama, and I kind of read that the reason why they're, you know, saying that all the other quarterbacks are going to be receiving snaps in practice is because that injury may very well be more serious than they're letting on. If that wasn't the case, why don't you let Driscoll get every rep in practice? He needs those reps to be functional in a game against LSU or against any team in the SEC for that matter. Why split reps? If you've already said throughout, you know, the season and throughout camp that Driscoll was the backup, why are you going to split reps now unless that injury is more serious than they're letting on? So I think they may have to burn that red shirt that they had planned for Jacoby Brissett out of necessity, not because they want to.
You don't think we would see Tyler Murphy in that situation?
I mean, I think you would see Tyler Murphy, but at that point, if Driscoll can't go, you got to have a backup quarterback on the field. And you got to have, you know, a guy ready to come in. And that's not Christian Provancha. So.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
I may just be being cynical here with how the UF football program handles, you know, their relationship with the media. But what have they said that Tyler Murphy and Jacoby Brissett will be getting snap reps in practice just so they could trot Tyler Murphy out to us sometime this week during media instead of Jeff Driscoll?
I mean, it wouldn't be the most bizarre thing they've ever done. I guess that how that's going to work out remains to be seen, but, I mean, looking back at what Driscoll did the first couple games, a couple turnovers in there, a little bit of discomfort in the pocket. I mean, do you guys think that he's, like, I mean, I guess nobody would be completely ready to go into LSU and play there, but, I mean, how do you think that works out if Driscoll has to play this weekend? Do you see that any way that can end well for Florida?
The only way it ends well for Florida is if something goes completely different than it did against Alabama, and that's their ability to run the football. I mean, we all know their run game was non-existent against Alabama. They're going to need that against LSU because you can't put this game on Driscoll's shoulders. And, I mean, the way this offense is built is for a type of game manager-type quarterback, which is what John Brantley had been through four games, which is what John Brantley was going to be throughout the rest of his career here. I don't think you go ahead and change that up just because Driscoll's in there now and he's theoretically has a better arm and a higher potential than John Brantley. I really don't see it happening unless you got a run game going. I mean, to have Jeff Driscoll throw more than 25 times is asking for trouble against that defense.
I mean, going back in the way back machine, look at 2003, Florida had a freshman Chris Leak went into Death Valley and came away with a win. I mean, that was a good LSU team too. So anything could happen, but I think Driscoll will look better against LSU because he'll have a full week working with the first team on offense?
Maybe.
Yeah, maybe. It depends about the injury stuff. And again, we don't really know about that. One thing about Driscoll, they say it's kind of the same offense when he's in there and that very little changes. This is something that's been talked about a lot the last couple of weeks just because he's been getting a little bit of time at the end of games. Do you think that they continue to run kind of the same offense they would with Brantley or with a week to drop a Driscoll game plan? Is it somehow different because of maybe his ability to run or something else he gives you that John Brantley didn't? What do you guys foresee happening with that?
I mean, I think they're going to encourage him to use his legs when applicable. I'm not sure they're going to develop a game plan for that, but it's going to be a necessity for them on offense, especially converting third downs, which they're only doing at a 33% clip right now. You're going to need Jeff Driscoll in that regard, but I mean, I just don't see them catering the entire game plan around his, you know, ability to run the ball over John Brantley. I think the offense is going to stay relatively the same.
I think they might open up the passing game a bit more downfield because Jeff Driscoll does have a better arm than John Brantley. So that'd be interesting to see if they let him try to air it out a little bit, get his confidence up.
I think they'll do that, but I don't think it's because it's Jeff Driscoll instead of John Brantley, because they did that against Alabama. They're going to have to do that against LSU as well. John Brantley showed pretty damn good ability to get the ball downfield the last two games. But when you watch the two quarterbacks in warmups, it's always Brissett and Murphy next to each other throwing routes at the same time, and Driscoll and Brantley. And the difference in the drop back and the difference in the release and the difference in the spiral, anything you look at as you're measuring a quarterback, Driscoll's better than Brantley. I mean, not reading a defense or understanding scheme or stuff like that, obviously Brantley's going to have an edge there just based on experience. But the actual physical tools of a quarterback, Jeff Driscoll's got them.
Right, yeah. He's all that's definitely going to be tested this weekend. It's going to be quite the challenge to go in there against that LSU defense and those defensive backs and try to come out with something resembling a positive performance. And I can't even venture to say win, but it's something that you can come away with having a good feeling about. One thing that I noticed, like we talked about this a little bit before, the first few games he was in there, thought he did a decent job of kind of staying in the pocket, being as comfortable as he could be. They didn't always protect him that well, like in Kentucky. But Driscoll, I'm talking about seeing the field and kind of making his reads and making good throws when he had the opportunity. The thing that I noticed against Alabama more so was he had 6 pass attempts and he had 6 rushes. Did you guys also feel like he was kind of a little bit too eager to take off and run it against Alabama, or was that kind of something that Alabama was doing that opened that up for him, or what did you see on that front?
I think it had to do some with nerves. You know, I doubt he was ready for that situation to be thrown to the Lions, like Alabama's defense. I think he was just a little nervous coming in against, you know, one of the best defenses, best teams in America with a 14-point deficit, you know, at home on national TV in prime time.
Yeah, I mean, that's a fair criticism just because, I mean, what are you going to do? Because they have some great defensive backs, great cornerbacks, great safeties. And although Brantley did pretty well, like we said, there was a certain point where Alabama kind of was stopping everything they were doing, and then Driscoll probably just felt like he had to make something happen because he's looking down the field, and people aren't open the same way they were open against UAB and FAU and Kentucky. So very different game for him, and can't blame him for having a different approach to it than he did in those games.
Yeah, and being down 14, the Alabama defensive line knows that they're going to be passing the majority of the time. They can just sit there and tee off on the quarterback. So Driscoll's going to know when he starts to get pressure, he's got to get out of there. I mean, they had downfield options, but, you know.
Yeah, and certainly one thing that didn't help Driscoll in this game was Florida's rushing attack. Didn't help Brantley that much either. They had just 15 yards in the game, and like we were talking about, they came in number 10 nationally. They had very, very good numbers on the ground between Demps and Rainey. I think they were averaging like a combined 180 yards a game, and they ended with 8 combined. So
yeah, as a team, averaging 259.
Right, not a great performance from them.
And if not for Driscoll, they would have had negative rushing yardage.
Yeah, this is true. He did have one long run in there and ended the game with 18 total of the team's 15. So
yeah, so now they're down to 210 per game from 259, and they've fallen from 19th in the nation down to 10th in the nation down to 21st.
Right.
So, Chris Rainey's average plummeted from 6.5 a carry all the way down to 5.6, and Jeff Demps was at 9.4 entering the game and went down to 8.8. So both of them saw their numbers just deteriorate, you know, rapidly. And can we all agree on something? Can we agree to end the Chris Rainey for Heisman chatter now?
That's
please?
Officially dead. If you were going to have a Heisman moment, and I've air quoted that one, then you would probably want to have it against the Alabama at home. And if you're not going to do anything there, then you're just completely out of that talk.
Yeah, and the guy that did have the Heisman moment was on the other sideline.
Yeah, very true. As we'll talk about a little bit later. But we talked about how Florida's ranks went down, how the averages went down. Alabama is now the number one rush defense in the nation, giving up something like 38 yards a game. And the next closest was in the 50s, and it was Virginia Tech. So how much of this is Florida's offense being bad, and how much of it is just Alabama's run defense being just great?
I mean, Alabama's run defense is historically just amazing. They haven't allowed but one 100-yard rusher in the last 50 games. That's absurd. They win football games by the way you're supposed to win football games since the beginning of football, which is stopping the run and running the football. And in this day and age of, you know, basketball and grass, I kind of actually have a little man crush on it.
Yeah, it's an interesting way to play. I know a lot of people are going to view it as boring, but that's something that it works for them, and it's certainly not a bad way to go right now. Tom, what did you think about kind of Florida's offense struggling versus Alabama's defense just being that much better?
Well, I think it was that Alabama's defense was that much better, but I think it should be a concern moving forward for Florida because the defenses, I mean, they will get a little bit easier because obviously Alabama is the number one defense in the nation right now, but it's not going to get a whole lot easier, especially with LSU this weekend. Then you got Florida State at the end of the season. I mean, Florida was able to run against those first four opponents because they were faster, they were bigger, but Alabama's defense, LSU's defense, Florida State's defense, those teams all have the size and the speed to take away the gaps and the outside that Florida needs to run.
Right, and I think the number one thing that surprised me about how the Florida rushing attacks work out against Alabama was the speed factor. Because I thought when you look at Demps and you look at Rainey and you look at Alabama's linebackers and specifically Hightower and some of the defensive linemen who are more of the plant in the ground slower types, I really thought Florida could have some success rushing to the outside, and they just didn't at all. I don't think they turned the corner like once all game. Everything was just strung out. Was that surprising to you guys as much as it was to me?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the talk before the game was CJ Mosley was out, so Florida was going to have a chance to get to the edges and a chance to break those long runs, and No, it just wasn't there at all. And also, the only criticism, or not even a criticism, but the only, you know, thing you could say even slightly less than amazing about Alabama's defense was their, you know, their front four, saying that, you know, it wasn't the strength, they were better on the back end, but they dominated the Florida offensive line pretty much all game. I mean, a lot of it was through their scheme. They were sliding around a lot and confusing the offensive line, but that set a blueprint for the rest of the SEC to follow for the rest of the, you know, the conference slate. And also LSU, Auburn, Georgia, and Florida State all have pretty damn good front fours themselves. So, I don't see that getting better as it goes forward. They're going to have to be more creative in the run game.
I think we can all agree that we all expected Alabama to, you know, not let Florida run for that 260 yards a game that they were getting. But I don't think any of us expected Florida to be held to 15 rushing yards as a team.
Yeah, that's a ridiculously low number for what they've been doing. Just like, you know, you expect Rainey and Demps alone to have like a 30 or 40 yard rush at some point in this game, yeah. And they didn't even reach that as a team in four quarters. It was certainly impressive.
They did this to them. Alabama's been doing this. This is just what they do. They did that to them in the 2009 SEC Championship game. Tim Tebow was leading rusher with, I think, 50 or 60 yards, and nobody else on the team had more than 10. And it was, you know, an amazing performance by Tebow just to get those 60 yards. Yeah. So.
One thing you touched on a little bit, Matt, with the Florida offensive line. When I look at Alabama's defensive line, certainly the rush defense is great, and you can't really argue that, but this defensive line from a talent standpoint is not as strong as they've had in the past and not as strong as probably a couple other teams in the SEC. So when you look at how badly the offensive line got manhandled, and obviously they looked good the first four games, but it was a completely different opponent the other night. I mean, how concerning is that for you with Florida offensive line? What do you think they can do going forward to try to get that corrected?
I mean, it is a big concern. We kind of thought that this unit was we thought it was going to be a critical unit coming into the season. And then through the first four games, we're like, oh, well, the offensive line looks good. I mean, wow, they live together. All this unity, sweet. They're gonna play good. And it wasn't the case against Alabama. I mean, it's definitely a concern going forward. Xavier Nixon is a liability at left tackle. Dan Winger has showed, you know, some liabilities at left guard. He's been a turnstile at times. He allowed Courtney Upshaw to come through when John Brantley got injured. And then there's Matt Patchen. Yeah.
Matt Patchen is in the game.
Right. And then Matt Patchen, who's just an onus for the Florida offense. He was in the game against Kentucky when Brantley I'm not sure he was in when Brantley got injured, but he was in when Driscoll came in on the two plays where Driscoll got sacked and fumbled and then threw the pick. And then he was in the game Saturday against Alabama when Brantley got injured. I mean, it wasn't his fault that Upshaw just destroyed Dan Winger and injured Brantley, but he was in there.
Yeah, I just feel like when we were talking about before the season, the offensive line was certainly a question mark, but when we saw how well those guys came together the first four games, I personally thought it would be something that would be a strength of the team going forward. Especially when you look at some of the guys on there aren't the best from a talent standpoint. You know, Harrison is kind of a guy who was a transplant, and he's not really shoo-in at any position. And Wenger's kind of a journeyman who has kind of bounced around. But, like, Nixon's a guy with NFL potential when you look at his measurables. And to have these guys kind of playing as badly as they did against Alabama was definitely shocking to me. And I think, I mean, do you think that, is there a way that they can improve it at this point? Or is kind of, at this far into the season, the offensive line is what it is, Tom?
At this point in the season, the whole team pretty much is what it is. I mean, you've seen them for five games. You're almost halfway through the season at this point. They're not going to have a drastic change. You know what you're going to get. It's just, I think we're finally seeing Florida play against some real competition.
I don't know. I mean, I think they can improve as the season goes on. You got to think about it. This is kind of a patchwork unit that hasn't played together a lot. And they are in the first year of a new system. They're into the first year of new coaches. I mean, I really think they can improve as the year goes on. I don't think it was a talent level thing that's why they got, you know, destroyed against Alabama. I really think it was mental. I don't think they could handle the way that Alabama rotated on the line, the way they disguised their stunts, the way that they just, you know, confused the offensive line. I feel like that's something that can be coached. That's something that they can improve upon. Because the you know, like you said, the measurables and, you know, all the physicality is there. It's just a matter of learning how to play against some of those better defenses.
Right, and if you look at, like, Kirby Smart and Nick Saban, they're going to be the kind of guys that are going to draw up some of the most difficult stuff you'll face all season. So
exactly.
If you're struggling against that, maybe it's not. I mean, as much as we think the first four games weren't a true indication of how good they are, maybe Alabama was not a true indication of how bad they
exactly.
are.
You're never as bad as the score indicates at the end of the game, and you're never as good as the score indicates at the end of the game.
Right.
I mean, as much as we said that, you know, that's going to be a blueprint for the other SEC defense as a way to stop the Florida offense, it's also going to be a great learning tool for the Florida offense, because they're going to see that tape over and over and over again in film, and the mistakes that they made in that game are going to be drilled into them repeatedly. So, I've got to believe they're not going to make those same mistakes going forward. If they do, they'll be replaced.
Yeah, it makes sense to me. One last thing to touch on the offense before we move on a little bit is wide receivers / tight ends. We had Andre DeBose, first play out of the gate. Shocking to me, at least. I know you guys are probably a little bit taken aback by this, too.
My mouth was agape.
Yeah. I think the entire press box as a whole was more shell-shocked than Alabama's defense when
right.
that first play.
Yeah, usually everybody after a touchdown or a play is like firing away on their keyboards, hitting up Twitter. There's 15 tweets all about the same play. I think everybody was just kind of stunned.
Scratching their
yeah,
heads.
Yeah, like, wait a minute.
What was that we just
that
saw?
Was Andre DeBose
that was
streaking
a deep
down the sideline. John Brantley threw it. He hit him in stride.
Against the number one cornerback in the nation, no less.
Yeah. It was fluky. It was wild.
Again, I'm sure you guys all know the plays we're talking about, but it was the 65-yard touchdown.
The first
catch
play of the game.
Very first play to set the crowd off for sure, gave Florida an early lead. But kind of moving forward from that, I mean, DeBose had another catch later, 25-yarder. Caught it like 10 yards down the field on a crossing pattern and made
almost,
a couple moves.
Almost had another touchdown if he could have held on to it in the back.
True,
of the
yeah,
zone.
That one was
right.
a very
over
very
Kirkpatrick
close
again.
Yeah.
And that was another great throw by Brantley.
There was another drop he had, so they were looking to him. I mean, do you guys think going forward DeBose is more involved? Because we haven't seen Quentin Dunbar in a couple weeks, and I mean, has DeBose supplanted him in your mind?
The kitchen sink, man.
I believe so, but DeBose actually started over Thompson in the lineup, so I mean, either way, I think DeBose is a better option than either of those guys. I feel like they kind of were just holding him back. They didn't really need to use him in the first two or three games, or the first two games, and then he was injured against Kentucky or against Tennessee and sat out Kentucky because they didn't need him there either. I mean, DeBose going forward is their most dynamic option at the wide receiver position, so you've got to continue to get him involved. You know, he got asked after the game whether he thought, you know, that was because he'd improved in practice or learned the offense, like his reputation for not knowing the playbook. But he said, yeah, I really felt like that, or he said, I always understand the offense. I feel like I just got my opportunity to make a play. So if they continue to make opportunities for him, I'd like to see him continue to make plays. I mean, he's got the ability.
Yeah, I feel like DeBose is their most dynamic option in the passing game. I mean, I don't want to compare him to Percy Harvin, but, you know, there was I'm not comparing him to Percy Harvin. I'm just saying there's always been that, you know, thing about Andre DeBose. Oh, he could be the next Percy Harvin. We've never actually seen him on offense really do anything. The most he's done is return a couple kicks for touchdowns. But to see him actually make some plays on offense is refreshing for, you know, Gators fans out there, and to see that Florida has a wide receiver threat it can go to.
Right. I just hate the even drop Percy Harvin's name in the discussion. That's like, not to mention, you just mentioned it.
Right. I said I'll mention Percy Harvin, but I'm not trying to compare him to. I'm just saying that there were those comparisons.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, there's been when DeBose was coming in, there was a lot of talk about finding the next Percy Harvin or finding a guy who can play the Percy position, which became a thing. And I mean, he never lived up to it, but this game he showed flashes, and he's shown flashes before, so maybe it'll just... There was a game last year where he had, like, four catches, and then it was, like, two on the first drive, and everybody was like, oh, Andre DeBose, maybe he's going to start doing things. So we're going to have to wait and see here, because it's just one game. It's just two catches, but certainly encouraging from a Gators perspective that you're looking for your best playmaker because the other guys weren't getting the job done. And first touchdown by a wide receiver all season, so definitely showing something there that we hadn't seen before.
And Jordan Reed coming back also provide them another dimension in the passing game. They said it was going to, and it showed. He led the team in receptions with 5. He still jumps when he catches the ball, but he catches the ball, and he's downfield, and he's a nice vertical option. So that should help them out going forward as well.
Yeah, I know. I was expecting Reed to be more of a vertical option, but we're looking at 5 catches for 30 yards. He was also pretty effective underneath, kind of
right.
getting open, moving the chains, more of a possession guy, a short dump-off option. That was one thing I want to talk about real quick before we wrap up the offense part. Schematically, there wasn't as much of the screens. There wasn't a lot of the underneath passes because I think it was just because Alabama was taking it away. And we saw how the Gators' offense kind of responded to that. I mean, were you a little encouraged by how they did that when they couldn't just dump it to Rainey and Demps every play? Or was it kind of discouraging because the results were obviously not that great? But from a schematic standpoint, did you do kind of what they expected you would do, and can they sustain more of a downfield attack going forward if they have to?
I'd be more confident in them doing that if Brantley were still the quarterback, which is a scary proposition. I don't think anybody before the season, you know, could even imagine saying those words, much less believing them. But John Brantley, I mean, he's got a harness on the offense. He looked good in the downfield passing game against Alabama, and that was the biggest shock to anybody, I think, more so than Florida's inability to run the ball, was their, you know, downright ability to pass the ball. They set a couple career or season highs for the Alabama defense in that first half, which is their passing offense. So, I mean, I would have confidence in them doing that going forward, but with Driscoll in there, who knows? Who knows?
Okay, and from a defensive perspective, the story of the game was obviously the performance of Trent Richardson. 29 carries, that's a career high. 186 yards, that's a career high. And two touchdowns for Richardson. He was almost unstoppable. And the thing that impressed me the most about him was early in the game, when the holes weren't always that big, he found a way to just drag whoever hit him that extra 2 or 3 yards and make it so difficult to bring him down. What was the most impressive thing to you about Richardson's performance? Tom, you got something for me?
I got to say his ability to just carry defenders for yards at a time. He seemingly did it every single play. I mean, the only Florida player that I could think of off the top of my head that was able to drag him down on his own was Jay Howard.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I saw. I feel like the linebackers in the secondary especially were just helpless trying to bring Richardson down. He's just too big. That's too much lower body strength.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of freaking silly the way he was manhandling that defense. I mean, you got to give a lot of credit to their offensive line, but Richardson didn't have, I think, but maybe 2 or 3 at the most plays that didn't go for positive yardage. And it wasn't like they were 2 or 3 yard gains. They were generally 5 yards or more on the ground. I mean, he averaged 6.2 per carry for the game, which is just silly. It was just kind of crazy to see, because the Florida defensive line had come into the game looking so amazing, and they didn't look at all like themselves against Alabama. It was, you didn't see Dominic Easley almost take the handoff. You didn't see Omar Hunter in the backfield. I mean, the one time you saw Jay Howard in the backfield, he missed a tackle and Richardson went through a hole and ran for a touchdown. I mean, Jay Howard played the best of the defensive tackles, but that's not saying much.
Right. I guess I can agree with you a little bit. I feel like a lot of the times, like, the defensive linemen were making kind of the same kind of plays they've been making. Like, Easley still got a lot of penetration from what I saw. Howard was still a beast, and he was around the ball a lot, especially for a defensive tackle. But I just felt like Richardson, with his vision and his quickness and his ability to just find a hole and get through it, was just too good. Like, I'm not sitting here thinking that the Florida run defense can't get the job done against LSU. I'm sitting here thinking Trent Richardson is amazing. I mean, is that, which side are you on? Is this more, like we talked about with the offense, was it Florida offense bad or Bama defense good? Now, is it Bama offense good or Florida defense bad? Because to me, it's Bama offense good.
I mean, I think it's a little bit of both. You can't just say it's just Bama offense is good. You know, I mean, you got to think about it in terms. This is an experienced veteran offensive line. They've returned 4 starters. These are, you know, 21, 22, 23-year-old men going against sophomores for the most part. And Dominic Easley, Sharif Floyd, Ronald Powell. I mean, Jay Howard's a senior and Omar Hunter is a junior, I want to say. But, I mean, for the most part, these are 19-year-old kids getting manhandled by, you know, man strength on the offensive line. I mean, for times you did see Easley and Hunter and Howard getting penetration, but it was just one of them. You know, there was never the consistent disruption of the offensive line, which you need to stop the run and especially to stop a back like Richardson. He always had a hole to go through. I mean, you got to give him a lot of credit for finding that hole, but to stop the run, you got to get penetration in the backfield, and they didn't do that consistently.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's not just one or the other, but I'm definitely leaning toward it was more Alabama's offense being that good, that methodical, as opposed to Florida's defense being that bad. I mean, Trent Richardson, I mean, you can't say enough about what he did Saturday night. It was just ridiculous. He was like a man among boys. And then my brother texted me and corrected me. He's like, no, he's a horse.
Right, yeah. And then, see, because, I mean, one thing that I saw specifically with him was that I thought earlier in the game the Florida defensive line and linebackers were better, and then as it went on, with those 29 carries, he really just wore them down. So that would be the area that concerns me more than, like, just their overall ability to stop the run.
But they they actually looked pretty decent in the third quarter. They held them completely in the third quarter. I thought they looked terrible from the beginning. I actually made a note in my notes. The Florida defensive line was getting absolutely manhandled on the first two drives. Like, Alabama just marched right down the field. They did what they wanted, and they didn't care. They didn't. It didn't matter if Florida put eight in the box. It didn't matter, you know, what they did. Alabama was getting their yardage. And, you know, you wrote a column about it, and it was great, about to beat Alabama, you had to run the ball twice as much nearly as you passed it. And that's what Alabama did to Florida. Florida threw it 29 times and ran it 23. Alabama ran it 43 times and passed it 25. They wanted to line up, smash Florida in the mouth, and that's what they did. So that's got to tell you something about the Florida defense. They saw that, and that's what they did. So, I mean, you got to give credit a little bit to the Alabama offense, and you have to take some away from the Florida defense. I can't just say it's one or the other.
Right, that's fair completely, but I guess what I was kind of more looking at is when I just see – you talked about how great the Alabama offensive line is, talked about how great Richardson is in great detail, but when we look kind of next week at LSU, for example, I don't think that I'm as worried about the rush defense as kind of – I mean, that
agree.
Might be there.
They don't have a back like Richardson. I agree with you there. I feel like they can do a lot better job going forward, regardless of the offensive line they're facing, because they're not going to face Trent Richardson again. I mean, they hope they get to face Trent Richardson again, but it's likely not going to happen. I mean, Marcus Lattimore in November is probably going to be able to do the same type of things. But for the rest of it, I mean, you're right. I'm not that concerned with the rush defense. I feel like they can probably get the job done against teams like LSU.
And then, because one thing we kind of – I mentioned it a second ago, but when you talk about – I thought Florida's defense got worn down as the game went on, and maybe they were getting manhandled the first couple drives, but I thought the offensive line for Alabama was doing a lot better job of kind of getting to the second level and making bigger holes for Richardson to run through as the game went on. And that kind of ended up inflating his statistics from what was already a great game. But I think that the conditioning would be the thing that most concerns me instead of like overall ability to penetrate and stop the run against any other team than Alabama.
I don't think the conditioning should really be a concern. I think it was Florida's offense's inability in the second half to do anything. The defense was on the field for nearly 19 minutes in the second half, which is just unfair to them to judge their performance based off that. Because Florida's offense wasn't doing anything to help. They got two first downs and 46 yards in the second half.
Yeah, Alabama held the ball for 34 minutes in the game. I mean, it doesn't sound like that much, but it's a nine-minute disparity. That's a ton. Right. That is a ton. And the Florida, like you said, the Florida offense was not doing the defense any favors. They went three and out twice after they gave up the interception return for a touchdown. That didn't help. Then they went three and out and only had, I think, 30 total yards in the third quarter. That's just abysmal. That's not going to help the defense. And it contributed to them wearing down, without a doubt. You saw that on the last Trenton Richardson touchdown run to make it 31-10. You know, Howard had him in the backfield. Couldn't cut to make the tackle, had him by his ankle. Richardson cut, avoided it, and then ran through a hole untouched and just, you know, evaded Josh Evans, who took a terrible angle, a Will Hill. Yeah, Will Hill angle of the week, and, you know, it was just over.
Yeah,
like we were saying, like, Florida's defense looked great in the third quarter. They held Alabama to a few three and outs, made them punt a few times, but the offense just wasn't doing anything, so the defense had to keep coming out there, and they were going to get worn down eventually.
I mean, a lot of that also was Alabama kind of vanilla'd up the play calling coming out in the third quarter. They knew they got a true freshman at quarterback, and they've completely shut down the run game. So they didn't have to do anything on offense. They kind of knew Florida wasn't going to come back. And if Florida did put a touchdown on the board, then they can change it up. But, I mean, they just came out and did what they had to do.
Right. To get a little more in-depth on Florida's front seven, I mean, we talked about Howard. He had eight tackles, I think it was. He was making a lot of plays. Easley was being Easley. He was getting in the backfield a decent amount and trying to make some problems for him. And the other guys were their normal selves. But I felt like, guys, I want to mention specifically, Ronald Powell and Sharif Floyd, I don't remember seeing or hearing from either of them against Alabama. I mean, did you guys notice them doing anything of value in this game?
They disappeared for sure. But, I mean, I don't want to sit here and heap praise on Dominic Easley and the other guys, because they got beat on two critical screen plays, which, I mean, we knew was a concern going into the game, and they took advantage of their aggressiveness and their inexperience, and Dominic Easley just, you know, thought it was another great jump off the ball like he's used to getting, and was 5 yards in the backfield when the Alabama offensive line was already pushing down the field to get a 20-yard gain to set up another touchdown. So, I mean, there's a lot of room for growth on that defensive line. I don't think that they deserve much praise, if any praise at all, after that performance.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was funny. I saw, I forgot who tweeted it or retweeted or whatever. They said, for as bad as Duke Lemons was when he was here, he made more plays than Ronald Powell has.
Yeah, we. Like, I mean,
Ronald Powell is just non-existent there.
For all the pass rush hate Duke Lemons got, he could play against the run. And Ronald Powell, I don't know if he's uninterested or if he can't do it or whatever, but he just, I didn't see him. I honestly did not see him in the game. Like, I don't know where he was.
Right, he doesn't show up. I mean, he might be playing adequately, but he doesn't show up and make plays. He's not being the guy that they hyped him up to be as the number one overall recruit in the nation. Oh, this buck position we're creating to make Ronald Powell a playmaker on defense. Where is that?
Right. And then to move over a little bit on the defense more, we A.J. McCarron, 12 of 25, 140 yards. No receiver really stood out for Alabama. There was a couple screen passes, a couple of short throws to the tight end. They did not get vertical on Florida at all. Longest pass was 22 yards, and that was a screen, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, it was.
I mean, what did you guys make of the secondary's play? If there was a bright spot, that had to be it, right?
I mean, yeah, I saw Cody Riggs jump a nice slant route late in the game. I saw Marcus Roberson make some nice plays. But, I mean, I think Muschamp kind of summed it up this morning. They didn't have anything to test them. It wasn't like this is a downfield passing offense that's going to test them. I think they got even more of a test against Kentucky than they did against Alabama.
That's a bold call, but certainly from the way the play calling worked out, you have to agree, because when you can run the ball like Alabama did, there's just no reason to...
Right, there's no reason to even look downfield for much of the game. I mean, like you said, the biggest gain they got in the passing game was on screens. That's not challenging the secondary, the corners at all. So
yeah, the secondary wasn't really asked to do much. But one thing that did stand out was Josh Evans missing a couple of tackles that led to Alabama touchdowns. So secondary didn't have to do much in the passing game, but in stopping the run, they obviously didn't.
Yeah,
agreed. I mean, I'm not sure. Pop Saunders missed the game for violation of team rules, whatever that means. We're obviously not going to find out the real reason. And I'm not sure it would have made that much of a difference. He's a true freshman. He's a lot smaller than Josh Evans. He probably could have taken some better angles, but that's not necessarily guaranteeing him a stop on Trent Richardson.
Right.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting that last week Dan Quinn was talking, you know, hyping up his secondary and, you know, heaping praise on them for their ability to, you know, get involved in the run game and stop the run, and they were just not able to do that Saturday.
Right, and just a quick note, from what we know is, oh, my God, I'm blanking on his name. Pop Saunders, the guy that was suspended. Saunders. He'll be back next week, so we're probably not going to see a lot of Evans. He's been on the field some. In nickel situations, they say on the depth chart that Saunders kind of moves over to nickel, and then Evans gets out there. So he'll be out there some, but more Saunders, less Evans, so that's probably not as much of a concern.
I think it's just depending upon the formation. I mean, we saw a lot of Evans against Tennessee and Kentucky because they played a lot of nickel. But like you said, if they're playing in base, they're not gonna have Evans out there.
Right. So last thing on the defense, last thing on the secondary. For me, I want to talk about Marcus Roberson real quick, because obviously this was not the game where he was tested, and we just discussed that. But from what I've seen through five games, I'm ready to say that he's really good. Is anybody else on board Marcus Roberson bandwagon?
Yeah, I'm hopping right on Wonder. I might even be in the call shotgun on that bandwagon, because I mean the dude looks really, really good for a freshman. He's physical. He's got size. He's fast. He blankets coverage. I mean, he hasn't been beat. You know, you haven't seen him. He got, you know, beat against UAB on that one touchdown that was called back, but he had great coverage on the play, and it was just a great throw. Right. There's no defense for a great throw. So, yeah. I mean, I'm impressed, yeah.
I've been driving this bandwagon since fall camp. I might even go so far back as to say on National Signing Day I was driving this bandwagon. So not so much because at the time Janoris was still on the team, so we didn't think that Marcus Roberson was going to see the field as much as he has been, but everything I've seen from him has been impressive except for his ability to actually hold on interceptions.
Right, yeah, he's got good measurables. He's been able to shadow people. Everything the receivers have done, he's been able to match, and when the ball goes up, he can go up and get it too. So, I mean, he's definitely been a solid player for them. Haven't seen him in run, but I mean, that could be me just missing a tackle he makes or two, or he just hasn't been run at or whatever, so I'm not going to hold that against him because I haven't seen him do it. But, I mean, solid play from Marcus Roberson so far this year. All right, it's that time of the show. We're about ready to hand out our weekly awards. We have the Ahmad Black Award for Excellence in the Field of Sport and the Will Hill Awful Life Decision of the Week. As always, we'll start with the Ahmads, and as always, we will start with Matt Watts.
And as always, I will be giving out golf awards this week.
We said last week no more golf awards.
I don't listen to anybody.
If he's
I play my
golf
own
award, that means you have to give a tennis award.
I don't have them prepared. Maybe next week. Maybe on Friday I'll just sprinkle one in there when you guys aren't around. But
we'll see. We've got a double dip. really? For golf awards. Yeah, these are good, though. Kevin Na won the Justin Timberlake event yesterday.
There's a Justin Timberlake event?
In Vegas, yeah. He has a tour stop every year. Anyway.
Sounds noteworthy.
Kevin Na, you haven't heard of him. You might know him for seeing him on Not Top 10 on Friday for whiffing on a tee shot, completely whiffed. And he also holds the record for the worst score on a par 4 in the history of the PGA Tour with a 16.
Oh, I remember that.
Last year, at some point, don't you just stop him? You know, take like an
11. No, that's not how golf works. Your score counts until you put the ball in the hole. So, God. Yeah, 16. But, yeah, he birdied holes 15 through 17 to win his first event ever. He's played on the tour for 8 years. He's made 132 cuts. 29 top tens, and he's finished second 3 times, so he finally won. And it's a good story because his dad just came down with leukemia last month, so it's kind of a thing for his dad here in Breast Cancer Awareness Month. And then also, this kind of trumps it, Kenny Perry, 51-year-old, won his first tournament on the Champions Tour. It was 2 years to the day after his mom died of breast cancer, and then his sister also died of breast cancer on Saturday. And his dad called him up that night and told him, he said he was considering not even playing Sunday's final round. And his dad called him up and said, son, you just need to go out there and represent Kay today. Kay's his sister. So he said all he did was think about her and think of his mom. I mean, it's a truly inspirational story. He birdied or eagled the 17th hole to win by one. I mean, it's just amazing. You can't write that type of stuff.
Yeah, I had a golf joke prepared, but now it's just not appropriate. Yeah. That's a pretty solid story. I can't really hate on that. I think best bet's just to move on. Tom, what do you got for us?
Yeah, I mean, if Watts is going to double dip on his, I'm going to have to double dip on mine. First, Russell Wilson, Wisconsin quarterback. He was just methodical as Wisconsin tore apart Nebraska. 14 of 20 for 255 yards and 2 touchdowns, and then added another touchdown on the ground. Obviously, right up there in the thick of the Heisman talk right now. And the other one, I gotta give it to Andrew Luck. He's just been, you know, as good as he was expected to
be. He's been as good as he is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's as close to a sure thing as there's going to be. But yeah, he had a one-handed catch this weekend too, which was just awesome on the sidelines. And then I read this morning that he was given, you know, the opportunity to call some of his own plays in their hurry-up offense, which you just don't see in college. Like, that's like Peyton Manning-type stuff there. And while neither of these isn't as inspiring as Watts' awards, I mean, I think it should inspire the Dolphins to go 0-16 so they could grab them.
Yeah, I completely disagree. We could have a whole another hour-long show on that, so I won't even get any farther than that. But, yeah, certainly two worthy recipients there. Mine's just going to go to Clemson. They beat Virginia Tech 23-3 this weekend.
I like that.
I think that they're looking like this year's Auburn.
They're serious, man.
It's early, but they're for real. They got a quarterback people didn't really expect to be this good at this point. Got Sammy Watkins is obviously a player. Defense is good enough.
I mean, they started 4-0, and everybody kind of said, oh, they got to go to Virginia Tech. They're not going to beat Virginia Tech. And then they just handled them, yeah.
Right. You beat Florida State, you beat Virginia Tech. The ACC's not got a lot left for you, so.
Yeah, I mean, their only test left is South Carolina. If they beat South Carolina, we might be seeing Clemson in a BCS title game.
Which, I mean, it sounds ridiculous, but it's just as ridiculous as Auburn was last year.
Hey,
so
Wisconsin's got to be up there, too.
There's a lot of teams that are undefeated. It's still pretty muddled. But
yeah, I mean, every year this time we have, you know, six, seven teams that people think are going to go undefeated.
I think there actually will be 5 or 6 undefeated teams at the end of the season, though.
That would be just out of control.
BCS busters, baby.
Out of control. Anyway, yeah. Move over to the Will Hill Awards. Matt, what do you got for us?
Jack Del Rio again. I'm sorry. I don't want to overload on the Jags and golf, but Jesus, Jack Del Rio.
Well, what we've seen so far is they're deserving. So, I mean, I can't fault you too much. But let's see what you got this week.
First of all, last week, you know, sits on a 5-point lead, blah, 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 overruns Maurice Jones-Drew. So this week they come out and throw 50 or 42 times with Blaine Gabbert, who I think they got 19 yards in the second half. Completely lost to the Saints. It was abysmal. Monday, today, Jack Del Rio in his press conference says, the plan is to win the division this year. You've lost your mind,
buddy.
You've lost your damn mind, Jack Del Rio. You might win the division on Madden when you're sitting at home with no job in December. That's about it.
Damn. roasted. Wow. All right. Well, I mean, yeah, that about covers that. Tom, what do you got?
Mine's going to go to Texas A&M. 2 weeks in a row, they've blown big halftime leads. Mike Sherman has just, you know,
pulled a Jack Del Rio.
Yeah, he's pulled a Jack Del Rio in the second half of each of the two games. That's not going to cut it next year in the SEC, I'll tell you that much.
We'll get done in SEC football games. No chance. No chance. All right, yeah, and mine is going to go to John Bostic, because John Bostic in the game against Alabama this weekend wound up taking a swing at DJ Fluker, and I don't really know. I mean, they were playing through the whistle. There was a lot of shoving, and they were pretty far away from the play, and they were still going at each other, but for Bostic, of all people, to kind of rear back and unleash a haymaker like that, didn't connect, or else who knows what his status would be right now. But I was shocked by this move. I mean, what did you guys make of this?
John Bostic is, like, so quiet and, like, level-headed off the field. To see that type of thing happen in the heat of the game with him is not what I would have expected.
Yeah, it was a surprise. I mean, who knows what he said to him? He probably made fun of his funny-looking goatee or something. But
yeah. It had to be something. It's not easy to get John Bostic riled up. We try every week, and all we get is that it's nameless, faceless, and every game's the same. So, I mean, we got to talk to DJ Fluker, see how he gets under Bostic's skin like that. But anyway, I guess that about wraps up the show for this week. Be sure to send any feedback you have to podcast@alligator.org. You can also follow us on Twitter. I'm @GregLuca. You can follow us @AlligatorSports. Tom, say where you are.
@Tomas_Verde, TOMAS_VERDE.
Before we kick it over to Matt, we have to... he lied to you guys last week because he said he doesn't tweet, and I've seen him on Twitter, so we're going to make him shout it out. What's your handle? Let's go.
WattMats, WattMats.
So there you go. That's where you can go for all the quality Jaguars hate and Brave sadness, although that's probably on hold for a while. But lots of good Matt Watts out there, so be sure to check that out. Also, be sure to keep hitting us up at alligatorsports.org. Keep grabbing the paper. That's always fun.
Hit us up on Twitter with mailbag questions.
Right. Week. This is key, the mailbag. We gotta keep pumping those out.
Yeah, we want to see some fresh faces in there. I mean, we got some, you know, every week customers, but we want to see some new faces in there.
So yeah,
we'll see your name in the paper.
So yeah, tweet us. I think the last plug I have is that... No, I have two more. You can subscribe on iTunes, get all the podcasts that way, and then you can hit us up on facebook.com/alligatorpodcast. That's where everything will be. And
pick up the paper?
Oh, I already said pick up the paper. This is a key one. Pick up the paper. So let's see. This weekend, I'm not really sure. I mean, we're going to be in LSU. I guess we can try to get a show out Friday. Maybe I'll talk to Cody and Tyler, podcast. And we'll do one Thursday. Maybe we'll do one on the road. We're going to have to figure this out. But, I mean, it's a big game, new quarterback, so it definitely deserves some talking about. So we'll see what we can do to get a show out there to you. You guys got anything else before we wrap it up? Are we about good this week?
Wrap it up, Luca.
All right. Well, then I guess we will see you this weekend. And until then, thank you for listening.